Hey folks, we've been doing this podcast for over 2 years now, and you probably don't know, but we're on Patreon.
That's right. If you head to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/BIDWBASC, you can check out all the different tiers we have. And if you wanted to support us, you can chuck in $1 a month to the Human Fund, money for people, i.e. us, and that will continue helping us do what we do, which is talk about the secondary characters from Seinfeld each week.
That's right.
Yeah. So if you are a supporter, thank you. And if you've thought about it, thank you. And if you want to support us, thank you.
Yes, patreon.com/BIDWBASC. Happy podcasting.
I think I can sum up the show for you with one word. Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing.
What does that mean?
The show is about nothing.
But I don't want to be a
secondary character.
Hello.
Hello.
And welcome to this week's episode of But I Don't Want to Be a Secondary Character. We are a Seinfeld podcast where we take a random Seinfeld episode and examine the secondary characters from it. I am one of your hosts, Stephen.
And I'm the other host, Ivan.
And today we are talking about the, I guess you would say, the true start, at least in terms of storyline or narrative, of season four, The Pitch.
Yes, the very beginning of all those story arcs and different characters that we see throughout the course of season four. It was good because I find season four to be like my favorite of all the seasons because it's just like one big story across all those episodes.
Yeah, other than the Susan storyline, it's probably the only season of Seinfeld with an arc that goes all the way through.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, a lot of characters make their debut in this episode as well.
Yeah, so, they do. And yeah, we'll talk about a few of those. We'll be talking about, amongst others, Russell Dalrymple, who debuts in this episode. Crazy Joe Davola, one of Seinfeld's many enemies.
Yes, we'll touch on him. We have already spoken about him in our Jerry's Enemies episode.
That's right. We'll also be talking about Susan Ross, who makes, again, her first appearance in this episode. Mm-hmm. We'll also be talking about Stu Kermack, I think his name is.
Yeah, Stu Sharmack and Jay Crespi.
Jay Crespi, yeah, the NBC executives who approached Seinfeld for his show.
That's
and
right.
And a couple of others like Dr. Reston.
Yes, that's right.
And maybe even Newman.
Maybe even Newman, yeah. A very young Wayne Knight in this episode.
That's right.
Yeah, he was just so young, wasn't he?
Yeah. It's like, yeah, he's weird. Yeah. He's like bigger and younger.
Yeah, bigger and younger. Yeah, that's right.
If you want to get in touch with us, you can email BIDWBASCpodcast@gmail.com. You can check us out on social media. All the links to those are in our show notes.
That's right.
And you can support us on Patreon. So if you want to chip in a few bucks a month, you can get some extra content every fortnight where you might review a movie or go through a list or whatever we feel.
Yeah, whatever we feel. Something usually Seinfeld related.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. And if you don't like the commitment, you can donate to us rather on PayPal for a one-off donation. So those links are in the show notes if you are interested. So any dollar helps and it helps keep the show going.
That's right. And if you want to support us but don't want to spend any money, you can leave a review for this episode and any past episodes of the podcast on whatever podcast service you choose to listen to. It really helps out. So if you want to do that, that would be amazing.
Yeah. And we have received a review recently on Apple Podcasts, which is a 5-star review from the United States. So if that was you, thank you very much.
Yeah. No, we really appreciate that.
Yeah.
And yeah, if you take the time, then yeah, 2 thumbs up from us.
That's right. two big thumbs up. All right, mate. Seinfeld isms. So where the intersection of Seinfeld and real life happen. So what happened to you this week in life?
Well, it didn't happen to me. It was something I saw, I guess. There's a well-known, well, becoming more well-known Melbourne band called Amyl and the Sniffers.
Oh, that sounds pretty pretty interesting.
Yeah.
I was trying to find the right adjective. I was like, pretty...
Intriguing.
Intriguing, yes.
Yeah, no,
the
they
Sniffers.
Are, yeah, Amyl and the Sniffers. So they're a pretty cool band. They're like a throwback rock and roll, almost like AC/DC
sort of
band. They, if you see a picture of them, you swear that they're from 1983. They wear like short shorts and they've all got mullets. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Does one of them wear a school uniform like Angus?
Yeah, quite. That's about the only thing they're missing.
Yeah, school uniform, 3 sizes, you know, too small.
Yeah.
For their body.
Well, their clothes are too small, but they're not school uniforms.
Okay, sure.
I follow their singer. I can't remember her name on Instagram because she's just a bit of a personality. She's pretty funny.
Bonnie Scott.
Bonnie Scott.
But she's still alive.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, she didn't choke to death on booze in a car.
That's right.
On vomit from booze in a car.
Yes.
She posted a photo of her foot and it's covered in tattoos. And one of the tattoos says, giddy up.
Okay.
So, it's more of a observational Seinfeldism.
Cool.
It technically happened to her, but that's all I got this week. What
hey,
about
that's
you?
Good enough. No, nothing for this week,
nothing
unfortunately.
For you?
Yeah.
Damn.
Oh, well, anyway, Seinfeld news. You only have one item this week, don't you?
Yeah, a single one. So, well, we've kind of got some late news. About a month ago, it was Jason Alexander's birthday, and we've got to actually wish him happy birthday. So,
yes.
He did turn Jason.
Yeah, happy birthday. He did turn 60. And Richard Hurd, who plays Wilhelm, had his birthday recently. He's, I forgot his actual age, but he's in his 80s.
That's right.
Yeah, so good for him.
Yeah, I think we need to lock ourselves in the vault as punishment for forgetting two very important birthdays.
Oh, that's okay. At least we remembered them.
So yeah, we did.
Fine. Yeah,
better late than never.
That's right.
So the official Seinfeld news I have, a few weeks ago, I think it was three episodes ago, I reported that Larry David was recruited to narrate a book called Fuck, Now There Are Two of You.
Mm.
Which is the latest book by an author named Adam Mansbach. It's actually available now. It's available digitally. And you can actually go on YouTube and check out a minute or so long video of David in the studio recording the book. And it's hilarious because Larry David's just hilarious anyway.
Yeah, of course.
And you see him sort of doing a few takes and making a few mistakes and getting a bit of direction from whoever the producer is. So check it out. So
that'd
I think it's
fun.
Available on Kindle and Amazon and, you know, anywhere you get books, physical or digital. So, yeah.
Any of those big conglomerates, you can get them from there.
Yeah. So if you, I don't have anyone to buy this book for or to read it to because I don't have any children in my immediate life. But if you have kids and you buy this book and you read it for them or you read it for yourself, let us know what it is.
Yeah, please.
Or how it is, I should say.
Yeah, and try and read it in Larry David's voice.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah,
yeah, send us a voice recording or something.
Oh,
that'd be really
please,
fun.
Please.
Yeah, but if you don't want to do that, just let us know how it is.
Yeah.
I'd be really keen to find out, you know, what it's like.
Give us a 5-star review, like our podcast. Of the book.
That's it.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's all the Seinfeld news for the week.
Cool. Nice and easy. Then we got those ones out of the way pretty quick. So what do you reckon? We'll get into a small plot about the pitch.
Yep.
Now, you're probably wondering that the pitch and the ticket are technically one episode, an hour long, but through syndication, they are two separate episodes. So we thought about it. We thought, should we do the pitch and the ticket in the one episode or just split them up? But we thought, you know, let's just do the pitch this week and we're going to do the ticket next week.
Yeah. I mean, even though it is one continuous long episode, just sort of cut right down the middle, there are distinct parts of each episode. So it's worth doing individually as well.
Yeah. And we'll separate the secondary characters from the pitch and the ticket. So the pitch is season 4, episode 3 of Seinfeld, first aired in the United States on September 16th, 1992, directed by Tom Sharonis and written by Larry David. So he's done audiobooks and episodes of the show.
Man of many talents.
Yeah, miss indeed. After finishing his stand-up act at the Improv, Jerry is approached by two men from NBC who say they'd like him to think about a TV show based on his stand-up routine. They're called Stu and Jay. They're played by Kevin Page and Peter Blood, respectively. George suggests several ideas to him and then comes up with the answer. He should do a show about nothing.
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 You've got to emphasize that nothing.
Nothing.
And you've got to do the little...
The hand motion.
The little... He presses his index finger and thumb together and he's like, nothing.
Nothing. He emphasizes that.
Yep.
NBC has a bit of trouble with the idea, but George takes a liking to one of the executives, Susan, and she makes her debut. She's played by Heidi Swedberg. Kramer, meanwhile, swaps his radar detector with Newman for his helmet. He doesn't tell him it doesn't work, leading Newman to get a speeding ticket, which leads on to next week's episode.
Does that even work? Nah.
Yeah, does that even work now?
I love that so much.
It's funny. I was driving down the expressway and my radar detector didn't go off and I saw the fuzz behind me.
The fuzz. Who should I see behind me? The fuzz.
The fuzz. Jerry just happens to mention that to Joe Davola, he's played by Peter Crombie, who also makes his debut, that Kramer is having a party. He doesn't take the fact that Kramer failed to invite him very well, and he kicks Kramer in the head off screen.
Mm.
And the helmet that Kramer took from Newman or swapped with him actually saved his life, inadvertently.
Still got some brain damage, but he didn't die.
Temporary brain damage, which affects him in the
short-term ticket. Memory loss.
Short-term memory loss, that's right, which we'll talk about next week. Other secondary characters include Russell Dalrymple, he's played by Bob Balaban, making his appearance on the show, and once again, Dr. Reston, the psychiatrist, played by Stephen McHattie. Yeah, many of the, or pretty much all the secondary characters today have all made their debut on the show.
Yeah. That's a launching pad for a lot of characters.
Yes. There's a lot of trivia for this episode, man, but I picked out like three or four of the best ones. Yep. So what have you got?
Yeah, I've got about 10 points, but yeah, we'll just go with about five or six in total.
Sounds good.
The first one, and I think it's the one that I find the most interesting, is that for this episode, Jason Alexander wasn't actually very happy with the idea of self-referencing, you know, Jerry's real life.
Yes, he considered it, quote-unquote, self aggrandized. Sorry.
Yeah, but obviously, I mean, who knows what he thinks of it now, but, you know, I think it helped take the show to a new level. So,
yeah, of course.
I think he would have come around on it.
Yeah.
And it didn't seem too self-aggrandizing. It wasn't too arrogant. They were kind of taking the piss out of themselves, if anything.
Exactly. It's really meta, too.
Yeah.
I just loved how meta it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it was sort of, too self-saluting and a bit too self-referential, I could understand, but I'm sure, like, I can understand why he would be initially a bit off the idea, but once it was, you know, written and filmed and shown, once he saw the episode, I think he realized, oh, hang on, they're actually kind of mocking themselves.
Yeah, of course.
And mocking, you know, sitcoms in general and writing. So,
what about writing? It's a sitcom.
Yeah. What writing? It's a sitcom.
I love that line.
Yeah.
It's a sitcom. This episode begins the season-long story arc of season four about Jerry and George developing the show About Nothing for NBC, which eventually becomes Jerry, the show within a show.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's based on Jerry and Larry's experiences in developing the series. And Russell Dalrymple, he's based on a Warren Littlefield. He's the former president of NBC.
There you go.
Yes.
Another part of this episode that's based on real life is when Kramer objects to the idea of him being a character in the yet-to-be-filmed pilot, Jerry.
Yeah, the yet-to-be-organized or written pilot.
Yeah, what does Kramer say? It just doesn't sit well.
It just doesn't sit well. There's only one condition. I have to play Kramer. You can't play Kramer.
You can't act.
Whoa. I love that reaction. Whoa.
I can understand coming from Jerry, who can't fucking act.
He can't act himself.
But that was actually based on Kenny Kramer, who Seinfeld Kramer is based on.
That's right. Larry's a neighbor.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when Larry was talking about developing Seinfeld in real life and that he was going to base Kramer on Kenny Kramer, Kenny initially objected to it.
Mm.
But obviously he came around to it because now he runs bus tours.
He does. A very popular bus tour in New York.
Yeah.
Those posters on the wall, you know, shows like Blossom and all those ones, Stephen. It was all promotional posters for NBC series for the 1992 to 1993 season.
Yeah.
Isn't that a great tie-in to promote those shows?
Yeah, and really subtly too.
Really subtly,
Not like blatant product placement, but like a Michael Bay film where it's just like Budweiser right here.
That's right.
Right in front of your face.
That's right. As it explodes, like the bottle just goes... Poof.
Yeah, I think it was really clever, actually, because it's distinct enough that you can see it. And you go, oh, that's Blossom. Yeah, I remember that TV show. Or, you know, at the time, oh, that's a TV show I know is on.
Mm.
But it makes sense in the context of a TV studio.
Yeah.
Being NBC. Yeah, really clever.
And it was
clever.
To promote their next season.
Yeah, really clever product placement.
Very clever, indeed.
My third and, let's say, final bit of trivia.
Yeah.
Joe DiVola, and we might have mentioned this in What's the Deal with Jerry's Enemies? I can't remember.
Way back when.
Yeah, way back when we covered Joe DiVola in a bit more... Joe DiVola.
In a bit more detail.
Not DiVola.
DiVola.
Joey Bola. In a bit more detail,
yeah.
He is actually named after an executive producer at NBC.
No, ABC.
ABC.
Yeah.
NBC, ABC, all these bloody channels are getting mixed up. Mm-hmm. Whose name is Joe DiVola.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm not sure if he's crazy. I'm sure he's very sane and very, very nice.
Yeah, he's
sure
executive producer. I'm sure he's half decent mentally.
But he could have, you know, psychopathed his way to the top by kicking subordinates in the head.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
Maybe,
yeah.
Who knows? If that's not true, I'm sorry, Joe.
That's okay.
Don't sue us.
We'll give you the, you know, if you're going to send the defamation letter, you know, just we'll give you
We'll retract that statement. You can edit it out and we'll re-release this podcast.
No, from what I've learned, you know that, have you heard of that YouTuber Friendly Geordies? You know how he's being sued by Clive Palmer? Have you heard of Friendly Geordies? He's like that comedian. I think he's from Sydney.
Is he the really dry guy?
He's really smart.
Yeah,
and he's
got
and a lot of his episodes are like political and stuff.
Yeah.
Clive Palmer's like sent him a lawsuit for defamation for calling him like a fatty McFuckhead. Fatty McFuckhead. So yeah, if you know Friendly Geordies, you probably know what I'm talking about.
Oh,
you can scope him out. But yeah, now what I'm saying is, so he's actually produced t-shirts like for merch for his YouTube channel, and it says Clive Palmer is a fatty McFuckhead, but it says like in asterisks and really small writing, in my opinion. Oh, but he's actually said he's got legal advice saying if you put in my opinion at the end, you can't get sued.
Oh wow.
Yeah, so you can actually wear Clive Palmer as a fatty McFuckhead.
Yep.
And then if, as long as it has in my opinion underneath, you can't get sued.
That's so, great.
That's great.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's, I don't know. I mean, defamation is usually a case of like, you've said something that will tarnish my reputation or is fundamentally untrue. Like I'm a, you know, I'm a criminal or something. Yeah, but yeah, if you're just calling someone names.
Like fat.
Yeah. It's like, that's primary school shit.
Yeah, that's
like,
right.
I mean, all Clive Palmer is showing that, I don't know, that's pretty, to not be able to cop that, it's like, yeah. I don't know, it's pretty spineless.
It's pretty spineless.
You know. I don't know.
Fatty McFuckhead.
I don't know. Yeah, like that to me sounds like a what a, you know, a 9-year-old would say to another 9-year-old. Like, you're a fatty McFuckhead.
Yeah, yeah.
And this like powerful billionaire.
Yeah.
Is, I don't know. That's just very surprising.
Yeah. I don't know how that turned up, but there you go. Friendly Geordies, if you listen, hey.
I'm glad I know about that. Fatty McFuckhead.
Fatty McFuckhead. Clive Palmer, fatty McFuckhead. Yeah, Google it.
In our opinion.
In our opinion, yes. In our opinion. That's right. Let's have a quick break and let's start, and I guess we'll talk about some secondary characters from The Pitch, Season 4, Episode 3.
Hi, this is Zach
and Aaron from Seinfeld Law,
and you are listening to But I Don't Want to Be a Secondary Character.
Welcome back to But I Don't Want to Be a Secondary Character. This week we're doing The Pitch. Let's talk about some secondary characters. Why don't we talk? Why don't we start with Dr. Reston?
Dr. Reston, yes, he makes his debut in the show, and he's in four episodes of season four, including next week's The Ticket. He's played by Canadian actor Stephen McHattie. He was in the films The Covenant, Watchmen, and The Fountain, and he was also the narrator in the 1998 comedy Basketball.
Oh, right. Yeah. I love that film.
Yeah, it's a good one. Back, well, you know, Trey Parker and Matt Stone just started South Park around that time, and they did their feature film. And yeah, he's the narrator.
Have you seen the film they did before Basketball called Orgasmo?
Yeah, yeah.
So good.
It's good, yeah.
Yeah. I am Sancho.
I am Sancho.
Why do you think you deserve this part? Because I am Sancho. And what can you bring to porn? Bring to porn? I am Sancho.
DVDA. That's DVDA. How I knew what I, like, how I figured out what it was.
Yeah, that was, I think that was their band name as well.
Yeah, that was, yeah, I know. Yeah. I won't say what it is, but no. Yeah, it's
Double Vag, Double Aim.
Yes, indeed. Anyway, this will have an explicit tag this episode, so it's fine.
Yeah, I think all of them do.
I think most of them.
Mostly because of me.
Yeah, mostly. No and apologies. Also, Fatty McFuckhead, Clive Palmer, in my opinion. Yeah. And based on a video by a YouTuber.
Even if we didn't swear, we should put an explicit tag just for saying his name.
Oh, yeah, that is explicit.
It's a curse word.
Curse word, yes. Clive.
So Dr. Reston, he's quite intense. He's very serious.
Oh, yeah, extremely serious. And I think he really cares for his patients.
Yeah.
And I think he definitely not sees something in Joe, but I think he knows that Joe's like a really particular case he's got to really get on top of. Because I think with Joe, yeah, he does need the regular medication. And for some reason, he gets forgetful. And he forgets to prescribe him another prescription of medicine. And I think he feels really defeated. He's in Europe, you know, enjoying his time with Elaine. But I feel like he's like, shit, I can't help Joe.
Yeah, I think he's really distracted.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's part of it as well is because he cares so much about his patients and he takes his job very, very seriously and their care very seriously. I think he feels really guilty for forgetting to.
I think he does too.
Make sure that Joe has enough meds while he's away.
Because, like I said before, I think Joe is like a really specialized case. I think it's probably his most deranged. I shouldn't say that about people with mental illness, but probably his most. What do you call it?
At risk
patient. Yeah,
yeah.
I think. Yeah. Sorry. That was. Yeah.
No, it's all good.
I was trying to say it the right way. But yeah, probably his most at risk patient would be Joe. Because Joe has like psychopathic, you know, tendencies. Homicidal tendencies. If he doesn't have his medication.
Yeah, he's...
He tries to kill Jerry on the set.
Yeah, he's very violent.
Yeah, he's very violent, yeah. Well, he kicks Kramer in the head.
For not inviting him to a party.
Exactly, yeah.
And he vows revenge on Jerry for no reason.
That's what I think of your party.
Other than he doesn't like him.
Yeah, that's right.
I got bad news for you, buddy. He's, you're next.
You're next.
What? What did I do to him?
What did I do? He kicked me and I looked up and it was Joe Davola and he said, that's what I think of your party.
Yeah. I think he is a bit of a worldly man as well.
Yeah, definitely.
In this episode, he's with Elaine in Paris and Rome, which are two very, you know, picturesque, rich, culturally rich and historically rich cities. I think he, kind of reminded me in a way, I guess maybe because he's a psychiatrist as well, of Frasier.
Maybe, oh, right,
you know,
Frasier's
okay. A bit more, a bit more lighthearted and yeah. Probably doesn't take himself as seriously. But I think he enjoys the finer things in life.
Oh,
I can
sure
imagine
does.
Him going
fine
to,
wine, food.
Yeah, I don't imagine him going to a lot of people who like traveling might want to go to, you know, Siberia or Bulgaria, places that are a bit off the beaten path.
Yeah, I don't think Siberia is usually a common, destination, but yeah, I get what you mean.
Yeah, you know, but I don't think he would go to intriguing places just because they're challenging and a bit different. I think he would just want to go to like London, Paris, Rome, Milan.
I guess cities with more culture.
Yeah, and
compared to others.
Yeah, like more typical travel destinations as opposed to, you know, off the beaten path.
Yeah.
That's just the vibe I got.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I think he's traveled, but only within a very certain sort of idea of what travel is. Rather than travel for adventure, travel for cultural enrichment.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah, he's very high, very sophisticated.
I think so.
High class man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I said, I think, yeah, he's fully aware of Joe's intentions. I think with other patients, you know, ones who are less at risk, he probably would have still felt bad for not prescribing medication, but I think with Joe, he knows. I'm sure Joe's divulged so much information, you know, to him, and Reston's like, oh shit.
Yeah.
I better keep this guy in check.
Yeah, he is a special case.
He's the OG Joker.
It's true.
You know, because in the opera, he's dressed as Pagliacci, the clown. So he's Joker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
And forget Joaquin Phoenix. You know, Peter Crombie is
true.
The Joker. Yeah. If you think of it that way.
That's a good take.
The OG Joker.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm. Anyway, but so he's psychopathic and manic.
Yeah, he's
Joker.
He's got a lot of issues.
Joker.
Oh, very good.
Very good. Very good. That was terrible.
Joker-vola.
Yeah, I have to give it a Reston. Sorry.
No.
Terrible. Are we coming up with the puns again?
That's all right.
Anyway. Do you have anything else on Dr. Reston?
No, that's really it. What other episodes does he appear in again?
He is in three other episodes of season four. Mm. He's in next week's. I think he's in... Oh, jeez, what did it say? The Visa, I think, and... Was it the Visa? The Visa, and it was another episode.
Yeah, the one where Kramer has to pretend...
Oh, to be Elaine's boyfriend.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
But then Kramer gets sucked into his intensity.
That's right, yes. But I guess we can talk about that aspect of him in that
episode. When we cover those episodes.
Yes.
All right, let's talk about the NBC executives. Stu
Chermak.
Chermak.
And Jay Crespi.
Jay Crespi, yeah.
Yeah. So Stu, he was played by actor, writer, and voiceover artist Kevin Page. He's appeared in the films RoboCop, or the film RoboCop, rather, and the TV shows Friday Night Lights and the 2012 reboot of Dallas. Also, like Dr. Reston, he's appeared in four episodes of season four, as well as season nine's the finale.
Oh.
Yeah. There you go. When they get Jerry back to do the pilot again.
Mm.
Yeah, he's in that episode too.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think Stu is kind of like an experienced talent agent.
Yeah.
And Jay is almost like his apprentice.
His apprentice,
I think
yeah,
he's learning
yeah.
the ropes because
yeah.
Stu is the one who engages Jerry at the start. He's the one who pitches him.
And Jay's kind of there to observe.
Joe's sort of in the background and he's, you know, he chips in a bit, but he's not,
yeah.
it's not, their contribution isn't equal.
Could we consider them one character then?
No,
two characters?
No, because they have distinct, I mean, they're always together,
yeah,
but
they have
distinct personalities.
Yep.
And distinct interactions as well. So, yeah, I think Stu's like a gun talent executive. I think he's like a young rising star within NBC and he's
Jay's a young rising star?
No, Stu.
Oh, Stu.
Yeah, because Stu's the one who... talks to Jerry at the start.
Yeah, he pitches the idea.
Yeah, Joe introduces himself.
Yeah.
But I don't think he says much. I think he says goodbye and that's it, but he doesn't really talk to him.
Yeah.
So I think Stu is the gun executives who's probably brought a lot of talent over to
NBC.
Russell and NBC.
Yep.
And I think he sees something in Jerry. I also had a bit of a theory that maybe what attracted him to Jerry, and then George, once George, you know, comes into the office and has his little rant about artistic integrity.
You're not artistic, and you have no integrity.
Where did that even come from?
You need You're a team of psychiatrists.
Yeah.
In Vienna.
I'm not talking about the $80 a week people.
Yeah. You need to go to Vienna.
Yeah.
Be studied by
Freud
team.
Studied.
Yeah, Freud studied.
You need a team round the clock, having conferences.
Observing you.
I like how George is just sitting there copping it going, right.
He's like, you're right. You're
I
right.
fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Jew.
Oh.
I think Stew.
Stew, yes.
I think I got mixed up with, anyway.
Anyway, Joe and Stew
yeah. and George and Stew. Anyway.
It's a big stew of characters.
It is.
Yes.
Thank you.
A meaty, steaky stew.
Mm. Yes, thank you for getting me out of that one.
That's okay.
Getting me out of that pickle.
That's okay.
I think Stew really likes sort of outsiders and people who maybe could offer something different to the network. And he's always on the lookout for people who aren't fitting that normal sort of sitcom, you know, commercial TV vibe.
Yeah.
And I think he sort of, even though he doesn't know what Jerry's going to offer in terms of a show idea, I think he thinks, he's got a feeling about Jerry like, oh, maybe because he's a comedian.
And he does different things. He's very observational humor.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair point. I reckon as well, I think they've been, you know, they've had like all the generic kind of sitcoms in their repertoire for the last 5-10 years. I think Jay, or Stu mostly, but I guess Jay in a way, I think they both wanted something fresh.
Yep.
I think because even Stu says, we've been talking about you, as in Jerry, in our meetings for quite a while.
Yep.
So maybe they've, you know, maybe like Stu went to a club, or they heard that Jerry, about Jerry, or saw him on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, or, you know, something.
Yep.
And they said, oh, this guy looks pretty unique. You know, maybe we can do something with him. We like his kind of style of humor. So I think they were probably, you know, instead of getting like the same generic kind of people to do shows and do like the same generic kind of sitcoms and stuff, I think they were both after something different.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing that's probably parallel to real life as well.
Yeah.
I'd imagine, I haven't read about how it went down, but I'm sure NBC were probably looking for something a bit left of center.
Well, we've mentioned that. I'm pretty sure a lot of the executives at NBC, probably the more conservative executives or risk-adverse executives, weren't too keen on Seinfeld. But there was one guy there, like maybe a younger guy.
Probably like Stu or Jay.
Yeah, someone, the equivalent of Stu or Jay, sort of fought for Larry and Jerry.
Yeah.
Especially when, you know, after the second season, the ratings weren't that great.
That's right. Whereas Russell was seen as like Russell Dalrymple was seen as a conservative executive.
Yeah. He's, you know, he's very dubious of George. He's like,
A show about nothing.
He's
What's that mean?
He's like, so why am I watching it?
Yeah.
It's on TV. Not yet. It's such a good little cut down.
It is, yeah. It's good. And even even George realizes it. He's like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
So I think Russell lets Stu like play around a bit in terms of pitching him ideas that are a bit outside the box. Because I think Stu has brought some talent or some TV shows to NBC and it's paid off.
Yeah, and they're unique to the network as well.
So Russell trusts Stu with finding people that are different, but not so different as to be a disaster.
Do you think Stu has kind of convinced Russell that he's got to go off the beaten track to try and find different people? Or do you think, like, because I don't think Russell would be the kind of guy who'd instantly say, right, let's look at something different.
I think
Russell was probably happy with this status quo, but then someone refreshing like Stu came in and was like, hey, let's do something different.
I think it would have taken a while for Stu to build up trust with Russell to, I think it would have been a case of Stu, you know, whenever he started at NBC or whatever their relationship started, maybe Stu talking to Russell and saying, hey, how about we just try something very slightly different? And then over time, as he's proven his, you know, his instincts have proven correct, Russell has allowed him more and more sort of off the leash or given him more trust, you know, because every time he's taken a risk, it's paid off.
Yeah.
But I don't think it would have been an initial, I think it's just taken time for Russell to get that trust in Stu.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously, because in that first meeting, it's a fucking disaster.
Of course, it is. Yeah. George ruins the whole thing.
Yeah. And Russell's not having a bar of it.
And Jerry gets so desperate that he pulls out the Freaks idea that Kramer gave him.
Yeah.
No one wants to listen to Freaks. I'm not going to pitch an idea about Freaks.
Yeah.
And even Jerry gets so desperate. He's like mentally, he's grasping at straws. Like, shit, how am I going to get out of this? All right, let's pull out the Freaks.
Yeah.
I bet you that the four executives were like, Freaks.
Yeah. Ugh. I think Jerry would have realized, oh, we sort of blew it and left the meeting. And I imagine Russell would have said, well, that was a waste of time. Thanks, Stu. And I reckon Stu and Susan as well, because George says that Susan was backing them
and
was supportive of them. I reckon Stu and Susan would have worn Russell down and said, no, I think we should either at least give them a second meeting, which they do.
Which they do, yeah.
In next week's episode. And I reckon they would have convinced Russell to, you know, sort of put aside his like doubts.
Okay? Yeah.
You know, they cooked the first meeting. They were nervous. You know, they're sort of amateurs. Let's try it again and see what happens.
Yeah, see what happens, yeah.
Yeah, and yep. I think the only reason Russell listened to that was because he trusts you.
Yeah. Susan, too. I think he has very high regard for Susan.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think, yeah, Russell is, and we, you know, I guess this can segue into Russell.
Mm. We haven't talked about Jay. Oh, I guess Jay and Stu are kind of really, like part and parcel.
Well, Jay has, I think, a few lines in the next episode, but I just see him as basically Jay's, like, shadow. He's just sort of
Stu's shadow.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, sorry, Stu's shadow. Yeah. I think he's just, like, almost like an apprentice. Of course. Unofficially. I reckon Russell would have been like, hey, Jay, Stu's a gun. Follow him around and learn from the best.
Yeah. I think Jay was probably, like, started in, like, middle management or something, and then he's kind of worked his way up.
Yep.
But I will say that Jay, he was played by Peter Blund. This is his only known role in acting anywhere.
Okay.
He's got no other credits. And Stu, he was in 4 episodes of the season 4 as well as the finale.
Yeah.
Same we'll episodes as Stu.
In future episodes That's as right. well.
So Stu and Jay are basically joined at the hip.
Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, Russell in this episode, there is one thing that I noticed that after George... you know, says that we're not compromising and, you know, you guys, you know, this is the show, and he storms out.
Yeah.
Russell at first is a bit like, who is this guy? Yeah. Like, you're a bit of a joker.
That's right.
But when George storms out, I think a bit of Russell is at least intrigued because he kind of looks at the door as George storms out and he looks back and he looks like he's got a bit of like, oh, that, like...
That sounds
not that I want to go ahead with this straight away, but that he's not completely turned off.
Yeah.
And maybe Stu saw that mild curiosity and like, these guys are a bit weird.
Yeah.
Or George is a bit weird. Maybe there is something there. Maybe there is some method in his madness.
That's probably the choice that Bob chose in acting at that scene. Maybe he thought maybe, you know, there's a bit of, you know, curiosity there.
Yeah.
Maybe that was just the choices he made.
Yeah, I think initially when George was like, the show's about nothing, Russell's probably like, who's this clown? This is ridiculous.
Exactly.
But, you know, over in that minute or two, as George was trying to explain what nothing meant, you know, he sort of understood it a bit more. And when George stormed out, I think he was just like, oh, this guy's a bit weird.
Yeah.
So maybe there is something there.
That meeting,
there's always potential in that weirdness.
Yeah. That meeting scene is probably one of my favorite scenes ever in Seinfeld.
It's pretty good.
I love it. I think it's so well done, so well written. And it's just like the characters all just bounce off each other. And I love how George is like, has no compromises for nothing. Whereas Jerry's like, oh, well, it's still got to be about something. You know, it's like, what did you get up to today to Dalrymple? Oh, I got up and got to work. That's the show. Then Jerry's like, maybe something happened on the way to work.
Yeah.
No, that's it.
Nope, nothing happened.
Nothing happened, It's like Jerry's trying to compromise to at least try and get a pitch a deal, you know, and then George is like, yeah, he claims he has artistic integrity, which he doesn't have.
You're not artistic and you don't have any integrity.
Yeah, and he claims he did an off Broadway musical.
Yeah, what was it? Cucina? No.
La Casina?
La Casina.
Pepe the chef cooking miming.
He cooked on stage? No, that's the thing. He mimed
He mimed cooked tamales.
It's pretty good for just like a made up.
Yeah.
And I like how Jerry, he always does it, like whenever George is trying to like explain his way out of a lie or like try and keep up with the lie he's created, Jerry just makes it worse.
He does. By, like, it's like, what was like, the name of the chef?
Yeah. George is like, oh, fuck, don't do this to me, Jerry.
Yeah, that's right. I love
it. And you can tell Jerry's like getting off on it.
Yeah, he's loving it. He's loving it. I know I'm getting a bit of a head, but in The Ticket, I love when Jay and Stu ask for a script or like a script of.
Yeah, what was his reason again that he couldn't find it?
He couldn't find it. He moved.
Oh, that's right.
And, you
right.
know, he couldn't find the, you know, he got lost somewhere.
In a move or something.
Yeah. But that's in The Ticket, but that's good. I love how it comes back to him in the next ep.
Yeah, so I really like Stu.
Yeah,
I think he's a bit of a gun executive, and I think he wants to change television. I think he probably grew up in the '70s and eighties when sitcoms were very, very cookie cutter.
Yeah,
and you know, much like real life, he saw potential in Jerry or
that's
the show
right.
Jerry, even though it didn't happen. And you know, that's his mission. I think he wants to find people who can disrupt television.
And I think that they weren't, I don't think Stu and Jay were like fans of Jerry. I think somehow they either caught him on like a late night talk show.
Yeah, I think it was an accidental.
It was an accidental discovery because like I said, they had been talking about him for like several meetings. Mm. That's probably like what a few weeks worth of meetings.
Yeah, probably.
He got brought up. So
yeah.
Maybe they were trying to find like, you know, the next up and coming comedian or something. And they thought, oh, Jerry's a good fit.
Yep.
Works.
Yep, for sure.
Art imitating real life.
That's right.
Indeed.
Do you have anything else about Jay or Stu?
No, but yeah, we won't talk about them next week, obviously, because they do basically the same thing from this episode.
That's right.
Yeah. Who do you have, buddy?
Well, the only other person I have is Newman.
Yeah, a very young Wayne Knight.
Yeah.
Yeah. I looked at him and I'm like, how young is he? He's probably like in his bloody 20s.
Yeah, late 20s. Looks late 20s, early
30s. Yeah.
The only thing that I thought was a bit different about him in this episode is that he is intentionally screwing over Kramer.
Oh, he is, yeah.
You know, like he's a bit of a slimy, like wheeler and dealer. He likes getting away with stuff and being a bit of a worm. But he never does it to Kramer. He's always loyal to Kramer because Kramer's the one who treats him with the most respect. So the fact that he's intentionally screwing him over instead of getting off on it was a bit out of character.
A little bit, but I think this is before like all the get rich quick schemes that they do together and stuff. I think they probably built a bond, you know, throughout the series. But yeah, I get your point. And I love how Jerry said, oh, does that radar detector work? And Graham's like, nah.
Love
it. Yeah. Because he knows Newman's going to screw him over.
Yeah.
So it's perfect.
He's one step ahead of Newman thinks he's got it over Kramer, but that's right. Kramer's in control the whole time.
In control the whole time. Yeah. It's good. Nah. But I think like Newman, obviously he's more involved in the ticket. Obviously that's the namesake, you know, his thing. And I guess we'll talk about him more in, you know, him trying to get out of a $75 ticket.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that scene in the courtroom's great when he's sweating. And
you were wanted to be a banker.
What? What are you talking about?
You were trying
banker,
to, you know,
banker.
You know.
Yeah. No, he's really good in that next week's episode.
I can't wait to talk about that.
Do you have anything else about any other secondaries?
No, that's it for me. Yeah, I guess next week we'll talk about the judge and the ticket and maybe a couple of other.
Yeah, and we'll talk about
that cop as well at Monk's who, you know, Jerry tries to get him to escort him out, but, you know, he has like three-course meal at bloody Monk's.
Yeah, in that situation, we'll talk about it next week.
Next week,
I want to get your take next week on whether Jerry has a right to be upset.
Yes, definitely.
Even though he's asked a favour.
Yeah.
Should he allow time for the cop to eat?
Probably.
Think about that, and we'll talk about it next week.
Well, we got a week to stew it over.
That's
so it's fine. And stew it over.
Very good. Let's take another break, and after that, we'll find out where this episode fits in our top episodes of all time and whether any of the secondaries sit in our top 20 secondary characters of all time.
Yeah.
What were you thinking? What was going on in your mind? Artistic integrity. Where did you come up with that? You're not artistic, and you have no integrity. You know, you really need some help, but a regular psychiatrist couldn't even help you. You need to go to, like, Vienna or something. You know what I mean? You need to get involved at the university level, like where Freud studied and have all those people looking at you and checking up on you. That's the kind of help you need. Not the once a week for $80. No, you need a team.
Welcome back. And, today we spoke about Season 4, Episode 3's The Pitch and its secondary characters. Now, Stephen, out of 102 episodes that we have reviewed as well as its secondaries, where does The Pitch sit for you?
It sits at number 19.
19? Wow, yeah, quite high.
I really like it.
Yeah. It's great.
I don't think there's any weak scenes or storylines in the episode. The only thing that doesn't make me rate it higher is the lack of Elaine.
She's in
a couple of episodes, but she's not really
was she pregnant during that time?
Yeah, she was. So she was on maternity leave.
Oh yeah, that's why.
But they needed to explain where she was, so I think they just got her in for one day to film those couple of scenes.
That's fair enough. Yeah. I mean, I'd probably give that an exception.
Yeah.
Yeah, in that case.
And I think she comes back in episode 5 or 6 after the ticket.
I think so.
Whatever the 5th episode of season 4 is, I think she makes her return.
She came back, yeah.
Yeah, but no, she was pregnant with, I think, her first child.
Her first son. Yep.
But yeah, I mean, the addition of Elaine would have made it better because Elaine's great.
Yeah.
But the lack of Elaine doesn't make it worse.
I think it worked without her anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the lack of an Elaine storyline allowed them to elaborate a bit more on the other storylines.
That's right. And also develop the arc as well. That's at the beginning of the
season. Yeah, because each episode's, you know, 22 odd minutes and there's not a lot of room for development. And I think it gave them a bit more breathing room and a bit more room to introduce some other secondaries as well that would become, you know, staples like Joe and Russell and all the rest. So
Susan. Of course.
And just the fact that it's a meta episode. George is on fire in this episode.
Oh, he is, yeah.
Jerry's probably at his snarky best in this episode. Yeah. Like, he's just giving line after line after line.
That pitch meeting scene, like I said, is one of my favorite scenes in Seinfeld.
Yeah.
It's just really well done.
Yeah, Jerry's at his, like, sarcastic, I'm going to fuck with everyone around me best.
Yeah.
And I love it. Yeah. And Kramer and Newman are great. I think it's a really, really good episode.
Yeah.
And the start of it kind of feels like the show is at a new level.
That's
right. Obviously the ratings at this time went to another level. They probably got a lot more money. It was getting a lot of press coverage. Like Seinfeld was blowing up the show kind of matched that hype.
Definitely.
And they pulled it off.
They did really well.
What about you?
For me, number 36.
Okay.
Really good episode. I actually like The Ticket more.
Yeah.
Like we should do it next week. I haven't rated it yet, but the pitch is really good. Yeah, like I said, that meeting scene was really fun. Great character development all round. I love how George is just, screws up the first meeting and Jerry really gives it to him in Monks. And and then we see Crazy Joe Davola, kick Kramer in the head off screen. And it leads into the next episode. And also that's the genesis of Joe and the other secondary characters that feature prominently in season 4.
Yep.
It's great. Really, really good. Anyway, any secondary characters make your list?
No. What about you?
No, I don't think any secondaries are in my list at the moment from previous eps. Oh, just Susan's at number 5, but I rated her like a long time ago.
Yeah, no, Susan is, I think, 5 or 6 for me.
Yeah, she's
got my list in front of me.
Yeah.
I do want to give an honorable mention to Stu, though. I really like Stu.
I like Stu.
I think
as
he's
well.
Even though he's like a corporate executive wanker, sort of like, sort of looks like a bit of a yuppie, cringy guy. I think he's like, I like the idea of someone wanting to like change things from the inside.
He's on the money.
Yeah. And I think he really values like art.
He values art.
He's like, well, I've got to make money, but can we make money, but also deliver shows that actually have a bit of value? Yeah.
And he likes being edgy too. He likes to try different things. And also Jay, I guess, is kind of an extension of him. So I like Jay as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, honorable mention to them.
Indeed.
But they're not Grumpy Old Ben, so they're, not my list.
They're like
positive, pleasant, cheerful.
Young dudes. Positive Gen Xers.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Cool. All right, that's it for another episode of But I Don't Want to Be a Secondary Character. Thank you so much for listening to us. We love getting your messages, your emails, your tweets, your everything. We are on all those social media platforms. You can send us an email at bidwabaskpodcast@gmail.com, and links to all of those are in the show notes. If you want to support us financially, you can subscribe to Patreon for $1 or $2 US per month and get some goodies. Or if you just want to make a one-off donation to support us, PayPal, all those links again are in the show notes. My name's Ivan.
And I'm Stephen.
And next week we are doing season 4, episode 4, The Ticket. Usually these episodes are in random order, but seeing as this is technically 1 hour long episode, we thought, let's just do The Ticket.
Why not? Can't wait.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Until then.
Until then, we will see you then.
Bye.
Bye.